Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist, where we come to you live every single Thursday from 7 until 8, and we talk about business, not just any business, your challenges. We have some of the most exciting and brilliant guests in the world, and you already know we've come out with the COVID-19, talking about transferable skills. We've talked about the new year, leadership, and today, well, today is going to be a very special guest. This is someone I know personally. I've known him for years, and I can tell you, you are in for a treat tonight. He's very good at what he does. I'll call him the Obi-Wan Kenobi of his profession. And
I love
may,
that, Ted.
He may say otherwise, but he's really
that.
Good. And before we introduce him, you know I never take this journey alone. I have to introduce my co-host, Lori. Let them know you're here.
Sure. Thank you. It's Lori Miller of LGC Interior Design. And before we introduce our Before we introduce our guest, I'm going to make a very, very, very large plea to check out the LGC Interiors Facebook page. I am running for Woman of the Year for Leukemia Lymphoma Society. The person who raises the most funds wins. And, of course, that winning is beating cancer. So please make a donation, share the page. Help us out. We have concert events, Creedence Clearwater Revival, May 15th. Purchase a ticket, $9.99. Can't beat that. Sitting at home in your living room. Of course, here in New York, it's rainy, so it would be great to be sitting in the living room listening to some good music. It's a live tribute band, Peloton rides. We've got all kinds of fun things. So LGC Interiors, please check out the page and donate. And tonight's guest tells us how to sell to the CEO and speaks a different language. Maybe that's why Ted calls him Obi-Wan Kenobi. So please introduce yourself and let's hear a little bit about you.
Well, thank you so much. But before I tell you about me, does that mean Ted is Yoda? I'm not sure about that. So. I am delighted to be here. I've known Lori briefly. I've known Ted a very long time, been always impressed with his work. He's also a guy like me that lives in the C-level space. I've built three companies. My first one went to $40 million. My second one, after taking an exit, was bought for five times multiples for $100 million. And now I'm in a third business as a thought leader. And I am very excited to be here and share some insight. So as they say in wrestling, Ted, right, let's get it on.
You mean like let's get ready to rumble?
Well, you're right, actually. I'm showing my age. That was before the rumble. Let's get ready to rumble. You got me on that.
So before we get started, so if anyone would like to call in and speak to Ed, his name is Ed Gollad. Did I pronounce it right, Ed? I've known you for years, and I know I said it right. Tell me.
Yes, sir. You are on the money.
Okay. And Ed, aside from being really good at running and building companies, he has this mastery in the world of sales. Very difficult to have a company that doesn't sell at some point. I don't care who you are. You have to sell. You need customers. You want to provide what people will call a value proposition. And our theme for tonight is, do you know how to sell to the CEO? And I would say, and Ed can correct me, selling to the C-suite, especially the CEO, there's a language that you speak, and I would say Ed is extremely fluent in selling in the language to CEOs, and he'll talk to you more about that. So that's our theme tonight. If you'd like to call in and you have some questions for Ed, The phone number is 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640. And I'm going to speak for Ed and say, bring your toughest sales question, because you might think it's a rumble for him, but he'll really like a walk in a park. I've known him for years, like he said, and I've seen him in action. We've done some projects together, and he's really good at what he does. So aside from building businesses, Ed, how did you get so much mastery in selling? And so two questions. How did you get mastery in selling, and how did you learn to speak the language of the C-suite?
Great question, Ted. In this hour, you're going to hear me say the word proof point. So when I answer a question, I use proof and data, not conjecture. I was the only guy in New York State, possibly in the country, who got into a university at 18 to actually major in sales 35 plus years ago. Custom program. I was actually a chemistry major, and I minored in business philosophy and communications, and built a custom degree. At that point, I fell in love with it, and I've been selling since I'm 15. Made 4,000 one summer selling vacuum cleaners door to door when I was 16, and over the years I went up and up and up the ladder into all technology. And the common theme that I ran into on every job, irrespective of my title or my vertical or my product, was watching these guys and women that were killing it, making all their quota times two, and trying to figure out what did they have that I didn't have. And I learned very, very early they had access to the decision maker, the budget, and the influence. And in corporate America, Ted, when you have that, everything just goes better and faster. And that's where I've spent my time learning more about that.
Okay. So you part of what's made you good is you've watched other people who were masters of their craft when it came to selling.
Well, that's how
I
learned.
Didn't matter what it was.
Well, that's how I learned. Right. I mean, when I was 28, I was selling mainframe peripherals for a public company doing $31 million. And within a year, not knowing anything about mainframes or data centers or equipment, I was doing 23, 24, and 28% of their gross over 3 years.
Wow.
And
wow.
I became their number one rep, and I quit to start my first company. So it was then that I was applying my mastery, and we'll talk about that tonight. How did I get in an account? How did I access and sell an account? And ultimately, how did I get the senior people to want to buy from me bigger and quicker? And that's really what it's all about. And to be extremely open, you don't sell to a CEO. I think that word is a misnomer, not saying you're not right in what you broadcasted. You don't sell to a CEO. Maybe you partner, but if you're lucky, you can have a mono-to-mono conversation. If you can do that, that's time to hit the home run.
So tell me, what do you mean mono or mono? All right, so go ahead, Lori, please.
No, I asked the same question. We both said, you know, how do you do that? What does that mean? How do you even get in front of the CEO to get to that conversation?
Great question. Let's talk about some stories, because people listening are trying to take away something and say, hey, can I do this? Can it help me?
Mm-hmm.
So back when I was younger, and there are folks listening that are early in their career, perhaps, in that mainframe market, I learned in a matter of 2 months by literally living with the executive level vice president of engineering at the firm that I was selling for, and I learned everything about the large Fortune 100 corporate data center environment. So much so that I became an authority of it. And when I was engaging with these accounts, and I'll talk in a minute how I got in, besides engineering my product for them and moving $500,000, $800,000, $1 million in product, I made them realize I knew as much about them and I was mano to mano an expert. I never had salesman on my business card. I never had account executive on my business card. So number one, you need intense credibility. And if you don't have the gumption to really learn everything about your industry to sell, they smell it and you're just going to be average. Getting in the door was a whole nother conversation, and I'll be happy to talk about that. And I've used several techniques, and I actually have a patent pending on one of them.
So you start, where do you want? So when you say mano a mano, you're saying instead of going in to say I'm a sales rep, you're really going in to have a business conversation with an executive. Is that another way to put it?
Exactly. Okay. And I'm very opinionated, but I've owned three of my own companies. I think most of the VP of sales and director of sales do a disservice to many of their salespeople because they get them, they spit them out, they go in the field, and they become account executives. No CEO wants to talk to an account executive. That's a nice name for saying, I'm going to sell you something. They don't engage at that level. That's why you don't get in. Now, if you change your title, it's better, but it doesn't guarantee you access. So mano to mano means how you speak to them. For example, when I was writing email and making my calls and getting my meetings, CIA, AT&T, MetLife, I can go on for hours, Federal Reserve Bank, I was able to craft email, and early before that, even voicemail, on how they speak. So I would study the earnings calls. I would listen to the executives talk. I would sort of study them like an actor. And then early on, way before we had massive free internet with earnings, you know, transcripts, I would literally study an annual report, not to impress them that I knew what they were doing, but to immerse myself. Why were they expanding this way? Why were they contracting costs? And I'm not that smart. So I would go to my brother-in-law, who was an accountant, and I would find friends that were in finance, and I would learn this. I'm talking 25, 27, 28 years old. When I mastered it, it enabled me to craft and converse with them. It opened up the doors. Once I got in, of course, I had to present myself, not as a salesperson. On a note, you've heard of the Challenger sale. It's awesome. I love it. And a gentleman named Dixon and his partner wrote it, and they were from CEB, which was a $1 billion consulting firm selling to CMOs. And Gartner, a couple of years ago, bought CEB because now they wanted to own the CMO world and the CIO world, which Gartner dominates. So they write this book called The Challenger Sale. You go meet an executive, you challenge how they operate. And I was doing this 35 years ago. The challenge is for salespeople listening, if you're selling analytics and one day you're selling to a retailer and the next day you're selling to a aviation company, you really have to understand how it applies. So for all the folks that use Challenger, it's awesome. But keep in mind, you're challenging somebody probably 20 years older than you, very well versed in what they're doing. And if they're an EVP or an SVP or a CEO, they were a domain expert. But that's what I was doing, Laurie and Ted, when I was very young. I would go in and I would challenge how they thought of the problem and usually got thrown out of the account. But when I didn't get thrown out, they said, I like your approach. And then the kimono opened up and we were able to engage and do business.
Interesting. So we had someone before, and one of the things I hear you saying is preparation. So you don't just go in because you know about the company, even if it's IBM and we all know it, but you listen to their earnings reports or you read them back then.
Well, look, you've had dinner with me. You know, you see the way I cut my meat and the way I sit and my pens are always polished. It's a little bit more than that. An earnings report is the tip of the iceberg. When I built my first company, I needed an anchor account to crack the U.S., and in the mainframe business, I was doing work with, you know, the Fortune 50. So I figured out that if I sold IBM and the CIA and AT&T, I would do multiple facilities, and then I could walk into any bank, any telco, any industrial, or any government agency, and I could tell them I was the big shot and I understood that business. And that's what I did. And I remember going to an AT&T site and not understanding why their data center was configured that much different than, let's say, a bank. And I would take the clients out and tell them straight out, I need to make $1 million, get married, have 3, 4, 5 kids. You have to teach me this. And the older guys loved it, and they taught me the business, and I would take notes and study it. And I had these like notes all over my apartment on the wall. And then I did the same thing with the CIA and IBM. So people listening today have discovered.org, Zoom Info. You know, I one of my clients got Henry Schuck to actually acquire Zoom. That's the tip of the iceberg. If you really want to get to a CEO, you have to really put in some serious time and not just learn about what they're doing, but ask the question, why are they doing it? I know this sounds complicated. The average top-end sales rep before COVID was earning $260,000 a year, making 3 times more than their parents, their friends, and their neighbors. You're going to make $250,000, then you better do the work. And that's the discipline that I've come from.
Well, that's interesting. So you know I've done CEO roundtables, and what you're saying is one of the things I would do. I would hire these analysts, and I would have them do research. Whether it was privately held or publicly traded, I'd have them research everything about the company and the acquisitions, where they were buying them, why they were buying. And sometimes if you just read the reports, you can recognize patterns and you understand, oh, they bought this company for talent. They bought this one for the geography. They bought another one for clients. And when I would get on the phones with the CEOs, I would say, okay, I see you've done 17 acquisitions. You bought this one here for, they had some IP that you needed. This one here, it seems they had talent. They had management. And they would say, yeah, that's what I did. That's exactly, wow, you did your homework. And then it was like, so now we can talk about the real challenges, you know, beyond. Now that we both established, I understand your company, and some other things, but that's just one example. They become more open and receptive to talking about what's really going on because you're now speaking their language.
So in essence, and I've seen you do this, Ted. That's why I became friends with you in the beginning, because I didn't know anybody years ago that was making a living with CEOs. I mean, that's actually how we ended up, you know, becoming buddies and getting to know each other. So you're dead right. Let me fast forward proof point to 3 years ago. What would that be? That'd be 2018-ish. I filed a patent. Laid out $12,000, and I knew the attorney. She gave me a break. And I filed the provisional patent on the first ever in the world one-page business case using software and people that took a public company, aligned it to the vendor, and got C-level to meet with the vendor. Let me give you a proof point. Marvin Ellison, CEO Lowe's, $86 billion a year. Yeah, Lowe's.
Right.
Yeah, $86 billion. I consider that, what, a big company, right? That's a whale.
Right.
So I took my time. I had my little one-pager. What did I do? And anybody listening, I will send you some of these. They're really not that hard to build. I took this one-pager, and in one column, I had to align the Lowe's initiatives to revenue, cash, and risk. So I studied their earnings and everything, and I realized what they were doing, driving their pro channel and et cetera, et cetera. So now I know what they're doing, and I put it down in a column. The middle column was what's going on home improvement. I had to figure out what are the changes. Not hard to do. Download a Bain report, download a McKinsey report, and I got McKinsey guys on my board. So, you know, these are smart people. You read a McKinsey report, you should be paying $1 million for it. They're free. So now I know what the industry is doing. Then I got the third column. This is where the magic is, Ted. The third column was the vendor column, but the patent was not on the vendor product, was on the vendor use case. Translating your analytics, HCM, SCM, DevOps, whatever you were selling.
Hold on. I'm going to stop you. So you gave some acronyms. Just not everyone knows all the acronyms. So can you just give those?
Yeah, absolutely.
What those acronyms mean?
I apologize. I've been in tech now like a million years. HCM is human capital management, selling software to manage your people. SCM is supply chain management. How do you manage your product in and out of the factory, transportation, logistics? DevOps is building you the applications that form the foundation for an enterprise. So, but whatever you're selling, I figured out you could translate that to a use case. And the way this sheet read across the page was pretty simple. That, for example, Lowe's was trying to build a stronger do-it-yourself customer revenue base at a higher margin by going after women that are intimidated going into stores because it's maybe a man thing when you're going in to buy plumbing or whatever. And I knew that the vendor I was working with that was selling analytics could diagnose that. So instead of saying the vendor sold analytics, I made up a use case. And I said something like increasing buyer propensity in the do-it-yourself female demographic for 3% more gross margin. What that basically said is we can find them, you could sell to them, and you'll make more money. This page had some cash flow for 3 years. And then something else that was really cool, it put the price of the vendor solution on the page. No one's ever done that. Anyway, I sent it to Marvin Ellison. 9 days later, I'm in bed. It's like 5 a.m. and my phone vibrates and I got an email, Jocelyn Wong. People say, don't mention names. I'll send you the email. Jocelyn Wong sent me an email. Hi, my name is Jocelyn Wong. I am the CMO of Lowe's. Marvin got your communications and would like me to arrange to bring you down here into Mooresville, North Carolina, and meet with our team to explore your offering. 9 days. 9 days. I was working with the wrong type of vendor, and the deal wasn't strategic. If I had the right vendor, that was a $5 million deal, which I did replicate at
wow.
Under Armour. Yeah, crazy.
Well done on that one. Wow.
I guess what I'm saying is the CEO saw this business case and didn't say, oh, the rep did homework. He said they're saying that they could generate $38 million or $42 million of net margin. And that number was the right percentage of margin that was realistic for a company doing $84 billion because I divisionalized it. I could go on for hours. It's a sophisticated tool, and it's not for every situation. But I've had a lot of CEOs say to me, the reps were doing this. At least I know the product. I know the value, and I got the conversation. Now if I talk to that rep, at least I know what this is, and they're respecting my time. And I'm giving them away now, Ted. I'm not even selling them. I'm just giving them away lately.
So the other thing that I would say you did is you talked about an untapped market. So, and I'll say I'm going to assert that every company has an untapped market they can penetrate.
You mean untapped, meaning explain that to me. When you mean untapped to the vendor.
They have an effect. Lowe's did not effectively tap into the female market.
Correct.
So, and you could look at Apple Computer, right? They sold these expensive computers that could cost you anywhere from $1,500 to $2,000. And the industry that loved their computers were the ad agencies. Well, they came up with this little tiny device called an iPod and sold it for $125. And for the first time, they could penetrate the average 13-year-old who could, with their allowance, pay $125. It was an untapped market. which generated billions of dollars, all these people who never bought Apple products would now be purchase their product and then be converted into buying other things, laptops. So people have untapped markets, and you wouldn't think of a 13-year-old or a 15-year-old being an untapped market for Apple, except it really was, and they penetrated that market very well.
That's brilliant. That's a really brilliant statement. When I was at Eloqua breaking the marketing automation, digital marketing world, they were like the giant. They were the first. And I sold American Express. We were filling an untapped or a latent need. You're describing a latent need, a need that has not been fully discovered for a
exactly.
solution, but it's hot on the table. You know what they call that in sales, Ted? They call that a $92,000 BMW. That's what they call that. That's a 650 IL loaded with a $12,000 stereo. Because if you can write to somebody and say, I have optics on a different way of approaching one of your major priorities, and here's an example, not a reference with a customer, here's an example. Yes, the female market has buyer preference. Analytics can uncover it. Big deal. However, and then you describe how the engagement would work better, and you wrap it in a use case, and you put money behind it in return and lift. Forget ROI, but return, it's the grail. This is the topic of tonight, I guess. This is how CEOs speak. CEOs are brutal. They're wolves. They're dinosaurs. They're brutal. They eat their young. And when you get 10 minutes with them, you have to pony up and communicate like them, or they're just polite and say thank you very much, and they pass you off. That's why when the sales rep gets a meeting with the CEO, they're terrified, they don't feel confident, and the CEO is sitting there going, this better be good. It reminds me of one of the greatest stories I ever heard, reading this book that to me is my Bible, is Dale Carnegie, How to Influence People and Win Friends, How to Win Friends, Influence People. I'm having one of my moments, you know, being a little tired tonight. And people will say, Ed, that's an old book. That's like 50, 60 years, like 90 years. Who reads that? There was a page in that book describing how a man got a meeting with George Eastman. And George Eastman was building a wonderful auditorium in the Kodak complex, or the Eastman complex, at that time. And they were bidding on the chairs that were made out of wood. And this man had a small shop, 10 people, out of Pittsburgh, drives forever to get to Rochester for a meeting with George Eastman to make his pitch and see if he can bid and win these 2,000-3,000 chairs, which was a tremendously large order at that time. Tremendous. And the story goes how he gets a meeting with this one of the most powerful men in the country, and he walks in the office. And I've done this, so I was crying when I read this. He walks in the office, it's clad in wood, and he takes his hand and he goes around Eastman's office touching the wood paneling. And Eastman's watching him, and the conversation opens from this gentleman, this owner, how this wood, whether it was zebra, whether it was mahogany, whichever wood it was, the quality of that wood and the essence of that wood and the oil from that wood. Well, obviously Eastman was a wood connoisseur because his office was all covered in wood, and they spoke about wood for an hour. And then they asked him to come to Eastman's house, and he had lunch with George Eastman and his wife. And at the end of lunch, this is my career in a nutshell. At the end of lunch, you get what they call the whisper, where the CEO bends over, leans forward, bends over if you're standing, and crouches down, and he whispers in your ear, call me in 2 days, we'll discuss your proposal. And that is all selling that happened. And the man won the contract, and it was an incredible story. This is like, gee, I don't know, 80 years ago. So today, when I get meetings and I'm in a large account, when I'm at the CIA when I was younger, that's what I did. I only talked about them to the point where they said, let's talk about you, Ed. And I would not get into the product until the very, very, very end. Very end. And if you think it's old school, you got CEOs today that are stressed. People are working at home. Economy's upside down. There's the pandemic. You think they are any different today? They're worse today than they were 30 years ago because they're all stressed. And they are dying for insight and provocative thought. And that, to me, is the currency of our world in sales.
Interesting. So the whole closing techniques and all those things that you hear, you know, would you like to buy it and take it home today, sir? That's not what you use on CEOs. Are you saying that?
Well, you listen, I'm not going to be disrespectful because I've sold everything, dude. I've sold cars. I sold vacuum cleaners. I sold pots and pans door to door and cooked dinner on top of stoves. I've done everything. If you're in a retail consumer gig and you're selling TVs, yeah, of course you're going to close, take it home, finance it. I've always been in the B2B enterprise. In that space, proof point, you sit with me and you listen and I teach and I learn from you and you talk to people like Ted Santos that know me and they'll tell you the same thing. This guy, Ed, he never closes. Ed never asks for the order. It's incredible. There's an old expression in sales, Ted. When it comes to the close, he who speaks first loses. I never close. In fact, I'm at the point in my age now where I tell the prospect, I'm not going to close you and ask for the business. I don't think it's respectful. And then I shut up 1 minute, 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. And then you know what you get? Well, Ed, so I guess, you know, that two-year, three-year finance rate might be something we could alter. And they close themselves. And when they're done closing themselves, I describe what they did, and I thank them for it. It's a whole new world, man. The days of those tools and tricks, out the window. We're in OCD, ADD land right now, trying to sell to big companies.
So that's do you think that's across the board selling at any level, like someone who's a VP or a director, you know, a manager? Or do you think that's more for just the C-suite?
That's a really, really great question. I make a lot of enemies on these talk shows. I'll give you a really solid number. I would say in my career, I probably have lost easily $3 to $4 million of earnings because I wasted my time with the director VP. Waste of time. Sure, get to know them, learn about the inside of the company. You get some insight, but it's a waste of time. Several years ago, I was between businesses, and I worked for Teradata. Great company. 40-year-old company, leader in big analytics, machine learning, massive databases for like Visa, MasterCard. It was a rock star, but it was really winding down in their world. Anyway, I'm there. They pay me real well, and I'm cold calling. I mean, they paid me really well to just prospect, and I did it. And I remember getting a meeting at Viacom with the EVP of research, audience research. And he said to me, you know, if I think you're as good as I think you are, you'll meet the CFO, but right now you meet me. And he walks in this office overlooking MTV. It was an MTV office, overlooking the MTV lobby. We're looking outside on Times Square. We're right on 45th and Broadway. I'm a New York City kid, grown up in the South Bronx. And here I'm sitting with this guy, you know, in like the epicenter of Manhattan, comes in very handsome, well-dressed, two phones, sits down, eyelids flashing, and he looks at me and just stares at me. As if to say, you got 5 minutes and I'm out of here with the two phones shaking and beeping and moving. And I had my team with me that was trying to like, align the value and figure out where we're at. This guy was in charge of how people spend advertising money. So when your child or your friend's child is on Hulu and various social media, they got to analyze that usage, and it's unstructured data, so it's really complicated. Then they sell that to advertisers that are trying to sell you products. Wicked smart guy. Manhattan guy. Wicked smart. And I looked him in the eye and said, there's two things you're not doing with the unstructured data that will give you optics into that 11-year-old, knowing that the mother, of course, is going to make the buy, and you're going to merge the Nielsen data to do that. And if that's done right, you're going to spend $3 to $4 million doing that in your own data lake. Not only can I get it done for less money, I have another way of capturing that data and dealing with the set-top box data. Give me a shot. Give me 10 minutes. Hear me out. The guy closed the door and said, you got your audience. And there was a deal on the table. How long did I spend to prepare for that? 2 months. And I worked with four people that were older than me that had 30 years in media. And it took 2 months to get that sentence set out. And we had a deal. And then we came back to close it. And the company I worked for was trying to sell their product, which, of course, I was there to do. And it didn't really fit what they wanted to do at Viacom. And this gentleman turns to my team that I was working with, and he says to them, and I've had this happen with the CFO of Wolters Kluwer. I got plenty of stories. But this EVP turns to them and said, I got $100,000 right now on this table. I could sign this thing right now, give you $100,000 to do a proof of value, proof of concept. I'm doing it because of that guy sitting over there. Because Ed, he understands exactly what has to be done. But you're bloated. You're selling me your software. I don't think you can handle this. And we lost the deal. Moral of the story, you get to the CEO with the right product and the right value and the right homework, you got a 90% chance of doing business. But if your product is not made for them and can't fix their problem inherently, you think a CEO is stupid? That's the biggest mistake you'll ever make.
So I heard you on a podcast talk about statistics. Lay that out. So you have some statistics on why you want to sell to the CEO. You know what I'm talking about, Ed?
Absolutely. All right. So one stat, that's a really good question, man. So one stat would be HBR, Harvard Business Review. Everybody knows it. It's 3-4 years old. 60%, 70%, 72% of the sale is orchestrated by the tech buyer, enterprise buyer, before they call a rep. Smart buyers. Gartner came out with 70%. So the people you sell to now, they're so far down the road, you can see dust from their tailpipe. 32% of corporations feel that vendors, or 35%, are sort of misaligned with what they're trying to get done with the vendor. 60% know the vendors aren't prepared. Now, don't quote me exactly because I don't have my chart with me, but the trust factor of vendors runs 30 or 40%. 67% of these companies think sales reps are not prepared. I don't have a stat that's published. I'm going to tell you 95% of the reps cannot talk to a CEO. And the ones that can have the $90,000 BMW, and they're driving into the President's Club. But I can list these, till the cows come home. If you look at social selling and you look at Miller Hyman, Concentric Selling, Julie Richardson from Richardson, Value-Based Sales, you go down the list, Trish Bertuzzi, Inside Sales, CEB, Challenger, go down the list. The buyers are 60, 70, 80% down the road before they call you. You know what that would have meant to George Eastman and that guy back in the 1930s? He would have never sold anything. Because George Eastman would have said, I got models of the seats. I've priced them. I've tested them. I'm going to get the truck, brought them in, and I'm going to check the dye, and I'm going to check the finish and the color. Oh, what do you got? So it's brutal out there. And that's why sales today will shift. And one stat that scares the bejesus out of me is the Wall Street Journal, New York Times have published that in 4 years, 2025, look this up if you don't believe me, proof point, 90% of what we read in digital content, I'm talking magazine, publication, vendor material, et cetera, mostly news as well, will be AI-driven. And we're using AI right now internally. That would mean if my son, true story, that's another story, but my son just did very well in an IPO. He was working years ago trying to sell. If my son got back into that and was younger, he wouldn't make a living in 2025 because the buyer could be at 90%. So you're not really selling anything at that point. You're really building a relationship on steroids quickly.
So, okay. So aren't there also statistics about if you can get to the CEO, your chances of selling and your chances of closing a bigger deal and all that? Are there stats on that also?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Data point, proof point. Selling from to the top or selling top down generally gives you a 20%+ bigger deal. Gee, Ed, where'd you get that from? Because CEOs don't spend dollars. They spend hundreds and thousands and millions of dollars. They do big projects to move big enterprises. They don't spend 12 grand to buy a tool. And when they buy bigger, and they do multi-year. Selling to them, you get 20% bigger deal. The Lowe's meeting that I had, that meeting turned into a $3 to $5 million opportunity in front of me where I thought, gee, if I get into Lowe's, you know, I sell them 100 grand, it's great. Another fact, selling to the top, my call, 15 to 20, some people say 30% faster, less sales cycle. Proof point. Everybody has a buying committee. Everybody sells to 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 executive buyers, sponsors. We all know the Miller-Hyman solution selling, you know, power sponsor, et cetera. When the senior person, CEO, or in the case of Viacom, when the EVP says, I'm interested in this, the directors and the VPs, out of fear of their job, make you a priority because their boss's boss is interested in it. That'll cut 20% off your sales cycle. Fact, any day of the week. I don't care if you're selling fuel oil or toilet paper. It's the way the hierarchy works. And the last thing is when you're selling to the top and learning from the bottom, I understand you, the VPs help you, but when you're selling to the top, you got a 50, 60% better rate of getting an executive reference. When I was at Teradata, what they considered the holy grail, more than the deal, was getting a major Fortune corporation to come out and make a referral statement how Teradata helped improve their company. And they had many of them. You don't get that selling a director. They won't put their name on anything for fear. So there's all these advantages, and I'm sure people listening to me saying, Ed, I've been selling 6 years. How do I learn all that? Well, I guess the simple answer is when I was selling and I was that age, I had to go to the library and read actual books. Now today, you can watch TV and learn on the internet while you're also eating your hero sandwich.
I want Lori to ask a question, but I just want to confirm what you're saying. About going to the CEO. So I was working for a consulting firm and I called on, it was a billion-dollar company, and I didn't do great research, except I got to the CEO. And I'm on the phone with him, and we talk for a few minutes, and so the call ended. 2 days later, I get a call from the EVP of sales. The EVP of international sales and another VP of some other sales, and they have me on a call and they said, hi Ted, I got a a mandate from my CEO that I had to talk to you. I had to call you and talk to you. Who are you and what do you do and how did you get my CEO to demand that I call you? So it changes the dynamics. They now were calling me.
Right, but what, you're right, Ted. So, but what you're not telling the audience is they called you with the fear of God in them. So unless you come in a clown suit and you're selling popcorn, if your product is a great fit, you got a pretty good shot of doing some form of business.
Exactly.
But
right.
That's what makes you unique, because I know you work with CEOs all the time.
Right. Thank you. Lori was asking a question early on, and Ed, I told you, time flies on these calls. So
you're right.
Lori,
I can't believe it's like 7:45. You're so right.
Right. Lori was asking you a question early on. What were the questions you asked, Lori? I want to make sure they get answered.
Well, it was kind of just really, how do you get in with the CEO first? You know?
Like, how do you get...
And
you
I don't
asking,
know,
do
as a layperson.
How do you get past all the gatekeepers? Is that what you're getting at? Or,
yeah, it's like, you know, I mean, I hear it all the time, and it's kind of like people, like, use LinkedIn, you know, use your social media, and you constantly, like, all right, well, that's great. So you reach out to the person, and, you know, you hit them up with a message, you get nothing. You hit them up with a message, you get nothing. You call, right, because you know their company, and you still kind of have to get past, like you call them the gatekeepers.
Right.
So, how do you do that? What do you do?
That's a really intense question, because everybody listening wants a fast answer.
So
what
it's not
I do,
a fast answer?
Well, I'll give you a quick answer. What I do is a little different. Selling to a CEO gatekeeper, fact, selling to a CEO gatekeeper is as close to as selling to the CEO themselves. Fact. My second company, when I founded it, and we were doing development work and software for fixed income and a lot of complex, you know, IT training, I had a very big connection at Lehman Brothers, big connection. And I'm at the C level at Lehman Brothers. And one of the admins, she was a young gal, about 27, 26, and she was the secretary or the admin, if you will, to a C level at this massive powerhouse. Talking to that woman was like talking to the CEO. So the lesson learned is, anybody listening, you don't get past the gatekeeper. That's a fool's road to Zeroville. You don't get to know them. You don't chat up. You don't tell them, oh, I went to the same college as your father. You talk to them like the CEO. And the way that they want to be communicated to is only on one basis only. If you're aggressive and you push past them, you're dead. If you want them to help you, they have to look intelligent walking into a $2-5 billion company and saying to the CEO, oh, here's your schedule, here's your itinerary, the board meeting is Tuesday, moved up an hour, and somebody wants to talk to you. And that somebody wants to talk to you better be CEO grade communication. And that is why I've gotten into these accounts, because I don't bullshit around. I tell them I've done a lot of work and there's a way to improve, and whatever the KPI is, it could be net margin because their earnings per share are low. It could be general sales because their market share is dwindling. Whatever it is, I've done the homework and I send it to them. You know who taught me that? A guy that actually wanted to buy into my company. One of my heroes is Tony Parinello, the man that wrote the book Selling to Vito. He taught me that. And anybody out there that reads on the internet that selling to Vito is not important anymore because it's all this ROI are fools. Tony Parinello could pick up a phone and talk to any CEO in America. And he wrote the Vito letter, And that's where I got a lot of my ideas. I love that guy. And even today,
Wait a second, Ed. Isn't that an acronym? Like that book is a famous book.
I know. Yeah, VITO stands for Very Influential Top Officer. Tony writes his book 30 years ago, sell to VITO, CEO. And he was in every corporation, and he was the godfather of all these selling processes. When you netted out what really Tony was about, you talk to the CEO the way he wants to read and be spoken to. And it was not for everybody. I remember when I was young, I was working at SAS Institute, selling really complex analytics, way, way, way above my mind level. And I got into Costabo to Crystal. I got into the president of BMW in New Jersey with a veto letter. I got into all these accounts. The man is genius. What does that have to do with today, right now? You ever fly on a plane, first class, and you ever sit in first class, and you ever notice the CEO sitting next to you in first class? What are they doing? They read a book every week. They read voraciously. You present something to them, they absorb it, and then they decide what it is. That has not changed. What's changed is the social selling, LinkedIn, you know, Instagram, post a picture, go to Facebook, send them an email, blow through the secretary or the admin. You know what that is, Ted, Lori? That's being disrespectful and not being honorable. And that's how C-level selling today is working even better, having the dignity and the class to talk to them in the manner that they demand and have earned to be spoken to.
Interesting.
So
okay.
Does that mean snail mail is still good for them?
Well, the world is shifting, right? So if you're selling oil and the person you're selling to does not have a car, I guess that's not a good thing. So today, you know that CEO is on his phone probably 90% versus his laptop. You know he's under massive pressure. You know that you can mail something, but with COVID, who knows who's going to touch it? We used to FedEx these letters all the time. FedEx is still awesome. I'm a big, big, big believer in FedEx. Big believer in it. I used to fax things, and I used to call it the free FedEx. But today, sending a book, FedEx, to get a meeting is blasé. Paying for their lunch, it's nice. But putting your perspective down in a financially sound oratory and FedExing it, at least they know you spent $30 to get it done, and it may be worthy. Let's go back to Lori's question. How do you get past the gatekeeper? Fact, secret, big secret. The reason that I was getting through it to these CEOs is because the admin at what I sent, and it looked like an internal memorandum that was a profit and loss statement. And it was too hot to dismiss as marketing, collateral, sales baloney. It looked like I was an advisor to the company and I was giving them a financial status. It was not a trick. It was how I communicated. That got to Marvin Ellison. 9 days later, I get into Lowe's. The stuff works, but it's a bear. And if anybody wants it easy, I can't help them. I don't work for easy. I work for hard.
So, all right, we know you're a salesman. What exactly, you know, how do people reach you? What is your company? What exactly are you selling? Tell people a little bit.
This is my elevator pitch. So we take technical founders, startup CEOs, we make them into thought leaders at one-tenth the cost, one-tenth the time, and give them 15 to 25% more engagement with their audience, opening up their forward market so people know what they do and giving them a provocative point of view. And additionally, people bring us on board to help them break into a market or break into a country, and how do they engage at those levels? We are the only company in the world doing it. Does that make me smart? I don't know. I might be an idiot, but but it does make us different. So that's what we do.
And you say one-tenth the cost. One-tenth the cost of what?
So I consider Ted a thought leader. I really do. Mm-hmm. And I say this from my heart. I love this guy. And I consider Ted a thought leader. Published, his authority. I've been with him a long time. But if Ted wants to go national or global, let's say, and he says, hey, Ed, I want to be a global thought leader. I want to go speak. COVID's over. You're talking $75,000 to $100,000. Got to get the mm-hmm. books out, which he's doing. You got to get PR out. You got to get newswire out. There's a lot of work you got to do. And you got to walk in with a master's PhD and be an authority. It's 100 mm-hmm. to 150 grand. We do that for 12,000. Does that mean we make people Richard Branson from Virgin? But we take people that are invisible and we get them on in front and in center stage. That's what we're doing.
Okay.
And we're doing it digitally.
Okay. Got it. And if any of our listeners want to find you, reach you, what do they do? How do they do that?
Well, you can get a hold of me, Ed, at technicalthoughtleader.com. No one's going to remember that. Mm-hmm. Then you go to Ed Gollod, G-O-L-O-D. No one's going to remember that. Or then you just call up Ted and say, who is that guy? I want to talk to him. And then I'll buy Ted dinner for that. And by the way, Laura, you called me a salesman. So you owe me about $500 million because you discriminated against me because I'm a salesperson. I'm only kidding you, but.
Got it.
I know. You can't talk anymore to people. I don't know what. I'm afraid to say hello to people right now.
Especially without a mask.
So And so, Ed, you gave your personal email, so it sounds like they don't have to go deal with a gatekeeper to get a hold of you.
Well, listen, I answer my own phone, 631-418-5038, 631-418-5038. You call me, I'll talk to you.
Wow.
Ed, a technical thought leader, I'll talk to you. Why would I not? I'm just a guy. I'm just a guy. And we're all just trying to make last closing point. And, again, I thank you so much for inviting me. It was an honor. This is my favorite topic, but I want to make one last point before I go and have my dinner with my lovely wife. There is only one place to be right now in the planet Earth to drum up business. Fact, it's LinkedIn. You all know it's true. Facebook doesn't do it. Instagram doesn't do it. Mail doesn't do it. It's LinkedIn. We know that. Fact. We are experts in LinkedIn. I'm not selling you my help, but you need to know LinkedIn. And here's the fact. If you're 25, 30, 35, or 40, or 50, but if you're probably 25, 30, or 35, or 40, and you look at LinkedIn and you realize that 95% of these people are inept at communicating. Hi, my name's Ed. I want to connect. I looked at your profile. Oh, here's my calendar. Let's connect. If you look at that, it's a gold rush. There are millions to be made communicating on LinkedIn because nobody knows how to talk like the way the three of us are talking tonight. That's how we do all our business. And we don't ask for them to call us. They just call us. And then when they call us, I say, why? Why did you call me? Oh, I liked your profile. What was it about? Well, I thought this was great. Well, how'd you feel? Ed, I just want to know what you do. Well, I do a lot of stuff. I want to know why you called me. Well, tell me about your business. LinkedIn is where the millionaires will be made and everybody else will get busted out with no money. You have to master it. And I could probably teach this to a fifth grade class if they gave me 3 weeks in an average public school. That's how easy this is.
Very cool. So, Ed, those are brilliant last words, and we're about to close out. We're winding down on the second. So, excellent job. Thanks for sharing your secret sauce with the world. Always love talking to you, and thanks for accepting my invitation to be a guest. So, thank you, Ed.
And thank you. And when
thank
now that
you.
I got my, I'm sorry. Thank you, Laurie. And by the way, now that I got my double vaccine, Ted, and Lori, I'll meet you at the Capitol Grill in about a month or two on Lex and 42nd, and let's have that nice steak dinner again.
You got it. Perfect. Thanks for joining us, everyone, and we'll speak to you. We'll come back next week with another great guest.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great night. Check out LGC Interiors, and don't forget to don't forget to donate. Have a great night, everyone.
Take care. Good night.